The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Okay, so can you hear me okay? So I wanted to say thank you, Xinquan, for that guided meditation. It was really nice in your instructions. So tonight I'm going to talk about the Eightfold Path. Last week, Jim talked about the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering. We use this word suffering, but it doesn't, in kind of the Buddhist English, suffering is stress, dissatisfaction, wishing things were otherwise, discontent, that kind of sensation. The opposite of complete contentment, let's say that. But we use kind of suffering as the word. It's like an unfortunate translation choice many years ago, and now we're just keep on using that. So when Jim talked about the Four Noble Truths, he talked about the truth of suffering, the truth of the origin of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and then the fourth noble truth is the path to the cessation of suffering, and that's the Eightfold Path. So that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. I'm going to start with a little story that comes from the early Buddhist literature, and that there was a woodsman who was in the woods doing what woodsmen do. I'm not exactly sure, but he was in the woods, and he saw like, what's these bushes over here? Look like they're overgrown, and they're hiding perhaps like a path or a trail there. So he pushed the bushes aside and took a few steps in and realized, indeed, there is a path here, but it's really overgrown with lots of vines and spider webs, perhaps, and not so clear to see. So he cleared it as best as he could, just a little bit to walk, and he followed it. And the more he followed it, the more it became clear that this really was a path, until he came to this overgrown and abandoned capital city. It was kind of falling apart and had lots of plants overgrowing it, but it was definitely a beautiful city, or it once had been. Excuse me. So he comes back out, and he goes to tell the king and the queen, I just found this overgrown path that leads to this capital city. It seems pretty amazing and wonderful. Come see. So the king and queen go. They follow him on this kind of overgrown path, go to the capital and agree with him. This is a great place. We would like to live here. So they clear the path. They make it wide, they make it clearly marked, easy to walk on. They clear the path, and they rehabilitate or renovate or clean up the capital city and live there very happily. So in this story, the Buddha is the woodsman, somebody who has found a path, and then he has gone to tell others. And he has told the king and the queen, and that's us. We have a certain nobility, a certain dignity. We have a certain royalty, all of us, within us. And we have the capability to clear a path and to live in a place that has more ease, less suffering, more beauty, those things. The story breaks down a little bit as an analogy because the Eightfold Path isn't something that's external to us. It's not, unlike the story in which the path is something that you can see out there, the path is something that exists when we walk on it. It exists because we're doing something. The path doesn't exist independent of us. It's inside us. It requires us to, if we can imagine, to walk the path. Also, in the story, the path was linear. It went from someplace in the woods to the capital. And this, the Noble Eightfold Path definitely leads to a place of greater ease, less suffering, but it's not always necessarily linear. It's not always necessarily we start in one place, we do step one completely, and then move on to step number two, finish step number two completely, and then go on to step number three, etc. The Eightfold Path, and I'll explain what it is in a moment here, you may start at number five, jump over number two to number eight for a little bit, hang out with number seven for a long time, do one, two, one, two, one, two, right? It's just whatever you, whatever's happening in your life, whatever's appropriate for you, wherever, whatever you're capable of, whatever helps support you in that way. So even though we're talking about a path, I don't want to everybody think that it has to be one particular way with one particular beginning. So if we want to relieve the suffering, the stress, the discontent in our lives, then we need to bring all aspects of ourselves. Because some of our stress, our unease, comes from our relationships with others. Some of it comes from our thinking, the way that we think about. Xin Kuan talked about commentary. Sometimes our commentary can be uncomfortable and can make things worse. Can also be from our attitudes, our perspective that we see of the world. So there's all these different aspects of ourselves, of our lives, that we bring to the Eightfold Path and that the Eightfold Path addresses. In particular, there's three domains of the Eightfold Path and of the Buddhist practice. This is just a big overview I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to in the literature from the early Buddhist times, there's very technical terms. I'm going to just use kind of common everyday words here. So the first domain is our relationship with others. How do we treat them? How do we interact with others? And how do we... do we harm them with our livelihood or with any of our actions? So the first domain is our relationship to others. The second is how our minds work, the mental cultivation and the effort. And this is where mindfulness comes in. It's part of this domain. With the practice that we've been doing here, we're training our minds to pay attention to some things and to lessen our attention on other things. We're doing this very intentionally. It's a type of training. So that's the second domain. And then the third domain, as I mentioned, is our inner life. And specifically, what views and perspectives are we holding? For example, do we have a feeling or a view that the world is generally unsafe. So therefore we kind of use that lens or perspective to see or to interpret, let's say that, or to see particular things and to interpret what we see a particular way. If you have, for example, the view that the world is unsafe, you may also have the view that it's all love and everybody loves you all the time and it doesn't matter what you do, right? So there many, many different views or perspectives we can hold. So the Eightfold Path covers these three domains: our relationships with others, our mental cultivation, and our inner life, our views and perspectives. So specifically, it's not surprising that Eightfold Path has eight elements. For those of you who are new to Buddhism, the Buddha loved numbered lists. There are lots and lots of numbered lists. I've been like digging around in there. It's amazing. But I myself like it because this was part of his pedagogical style. This is how he would teach as a way to help remember things. Like, oh, there's eight. That's right, I can remember three or something. Just a way. So those of you who are new to Buddhism, and this is the first time you're heard of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, you'll hear a lot more lists too. So these steps we usually call have the word right associated with them. For example, step number one or path factor number one is often translated as right view. But we're not using the word right as in morally correct. We're using the word right to mean like appropriate. It's like if there is a nail, you use the right tool, a hammer, not a screwdriver or tweezers or a hairdryer, right? So it's right as in appropriate or correct or most useful. Some people translate the word, rather than right, they use the word wise or skillful. So you can, those all are used the same. So the first factor is right, wise, or skillful view. And specifically, it is the view that actions have consequences. This isn't surprising, we all know this. But the way that it's the kind of thorough application of this idea that actions have consequences, including when we're suffering, when we have discontent, when we're uncomfortable. So there's something underlying that. It is the result of we don't know exactly always what it's the result of. But the Buddha said in particular that suffering has a craving as the origin of the suffering. You guys may recognize this as part of the Four Noble Truths, and right view includes seeing the Four Noble Truths deeply as every aspect of your life. And it also includes this application of actions have consequences, so the things that we do have effects in the world. The second path factor is right intention. So do we have the intention for goodwill in generally in the world? Do we have the intention to see clearly in the world? Or would we prefer to just get what, you know, I want now, and I don't really care what's really happening. I'm just trying to see things the way that makes me the most comfortable, even if that means that I never open up those bills to see them, or never call back that person that we're having a difficult relationship with or something. So right intention is about having goodwill and compassion and the wish to see things clearly. And then if we have this, if we see that actions have consequences, that makes us want to have goodwill, because we can see that just our lives are better and the lives around us are better. And that can get specifically expressed in our speech, how we speak to others. And that is the third element, right speech. There's a number of them under right speech, but the obvious one is not to lie, and especially not to lie to ourselves. Not to lie, but to be honest with ourselves, what is happening, and to be honest with others. And for our speech to be beneficial for ourselves and for others, and to be timely and true. There are some guidelines for right speech. The fourth is right livelihood. So how do we earn our living? Does it cause harm to others? The obvious one, or something like an arms dealer or drug dealers or human trafficking. Probably nobody here does this, but is there a way that we can do our livelihood that really benefits as many people as possible, including ourselves? If we have a job that we don't like, is there a way that we can find some ease with something so that it's not so unbeneficial for us in terms of our mind states? Is there a way that we can do our job that, I don't know, maybe we're extra kind to the people that we meet or something, even if whatever job we have. And then after right livelihood, so maybe I should say that right speech, right action, and right livelihood were... Did I say that right? Maybe I forgot to put right action. I forgot to say thank you. That was just a test to see if you guys really knew what the Eightfold Path was. Yes, right action. So that's how it goes. Right speech, right action, right livelihood. So what I was going to say, that those three, earlier I talked about the domains, our relationship to others, that those three are our relationship to others. So right action includes the precepts, the training precepts. So in Buddhism, we like to follow five training precepts. If you want to have more ease in your life, and I'll just say that, if you want to have more ease in your life, then following these five precepts will be enormously helpful. And I say these are training precepts because it doesn't mean that you have to be, that if you are not perfectly adhering to them all the time, it's awful. It's saying this is your training, you make a commitment to do these. So first is to abstain from killing living beings. The second is to abstain from taking what is not freely given. This includes ideas or... there's lots of ways you could think about that. Post-it notes from the office, perhaps. To abstain from sexual misconduct. To abstain from not telling the truth. And to abstain from intoxication in a way that leads to heedlessness. Because if you're intoxicated, you can't do all these other things. It gets in the way and prevents you from being mindful of your actions and mindful of your intentions if you're intoxicated. So that's right action. I said right livelihood. And then there's three elements that are for the mental cultivation. Next is right effort, which is to put our energy and our effort to those things that support us and bring benefit to us and bring benefit to others, and to minimize the effort and energy we put to those things that don't support our well-being and don't benefit others. That's a really broad category, but that's the way that I kind of like to hold it, is, you know, energy is a resource, and how do I want to use this resource in a way that's going to benefit myself and others? And is there a way that I can soften those some of my behaviors that I have, or the way that I use my energy that's not supportive? The seventh is right mindfulness. So maybe I should have said this at the beginning, that mindfulness is an integral part of this Eightfold Path and what we've been learning here, and mindfulness of the body is a big part of mindfulness practice. So that's the seventh. And then the eighth is right concentration. So that is to be able to have a certain collectedness, certain composure, certain steadiness, so that you can see clearly, so that you can have a little bit of distance from perhaps something that is troubling. It's easier to see clearly if you're steady rather than completely distracted all the time. So the eighth is right concentration. So right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. I remembered right action there, right? For those of you who like to remember things and lists, you don't have to. I remember this using the mnemonic VISALEMCE, V-I-S-A-L-E-M-C-E. So there's no requirement to remember that, but I thought I'd share that. It doesn't work 100% of the time, as you noticed for me. But so now we can open up. Are there some questions about that?
Thank you. I'm just curious about the three domains and how they, if you don't mind going through the eight paths and like helping clarify which go where and.
Yes, thank you.
I don't know how they're related.
Yes, that's a good question. I didn't do that very well. So the first is, are the three for our relationships to others. Okay. The reason why I'm hesitating a little bit, it's an interesting thing, that when we talk about the three domains, I don't know why, it's usually in a certain order. And then when we talk about the Eightfold Path, it's in like a little bit different order. So the three domains, sila, ethics, relationships to other, that's the first. Inside that bucket is right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The second domain is concentration, mental cultivation, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration is in that bucket, basket. The last one is wisdom, and right view and right intention are in that bucket. Was that helpful? Thank you. I didn't explain that well.
You know, so I guess, you know, when I look at myself, I can see a lot of wrong thoughts, wrong actions, wrong speeches, wrong efforts, wrong concentration, everything. Yeah. So, I mean, does Buddha or the books, I mean, they talk about, you know, what can you do to rectify and to change?
Yes. So I didn't give the technical explanations for each of these steps, but there's more. Let's say this: that I think this idea of how I said about right effort is to put our energy towards those things that are beneficial, and to minimize the energy and effort and we spend on those things that aren't beneficial. Is kind of underlies all of it, right? So that rather than spending energy berating ourselves because we don't have right, quote-unquote, speech for wise speech or wise concentration, just say, okay, this is an area that I could pay some attention to, and then pay some attention to it. But I think it, for me, I'll say it's been really helpful to try to maintain some self-compassion and some kindness towards myself when I started to realize, oh, wow, look at the way that I'm doing this. It's not the way that I would prefer, perhaps. This reminds me that right speech is a way, when we start to pay attention to, we often see how our speech, the way we interact with others, if we pay close attention, sometimes isn't as beneficial as it could be. And so next week, we're going to take this particular path factor and look at right speech. I myself have found that really helpful in my life and in my relationships with others. So, do you want to add something, Xinquan?
So thank you for sharing that. Unfortunately, as we do start looking at what's going on in here, a lot of what we find is kind of shocking or surprising and not always good news or what we thought was there. So we're doing a few things when we're practicing is we're recognizing what's there, and that's already huge. Being willing to see clearly is saying a lot because it's taking some honesty, some courage, some willingness and effort to stay there. So, you know, every once in a while, it doesn't hurt. we're also learning to let go of habits, patterns of mind, thinking, concepts that are harmful or not useful anymore. The more clearly we see them, the more choice or place of choice we have to let them go. Sometimes just bringing mindfulness to them and seeing them, oh, is enough to stop it in its track. And that's huge, because during the course of the day when we're not being so mindful, it's just running its course and we're being caught in it and swept away by all these things. So it takes practice. So that's part of it, the awareness, the letting go. And then the other part is to cultivate the things that are useful and beneficial. And we're doing this in more ways than you're probably aware, just by sitting and listening more deeply and more honestly, and taking time to look at more clearly, taking time to feel whatever is going on more deeply. So all those things are cultivating healthier habits and patterns and can really start opening up for wisdom and compassion to grow. And it's kind of a slow process. So I know we want it to happen like that, because it's so, wouldn't it be great if we lived in a, you know, compassionate, wise world? But the fact that we're taking some steps is really, I don't know, I have a lot of respect and awe and, gratitude that people are doing this practice. Hope that's helpful.
Right. So I think what we're going to do now is give you all an opportunity to talk to each other and to share in small groups of three, what have you seen so far in doing this practice, particularly around what's been leading to this quality of dukkha or dissatisfaction. So what I'd like to ask you to do is just look around and maybe find two other people, so form groups of three, and then we'll give you a question, or we'll give you a question to then respond to in the group. And so you'll just, each person will speak for a little bit and then rotate. So why don't you find a group of three, and if you have any, so this will be an opportunity to go around the circle a number of times, each person making some simple observation, and then finishing and letting the next person talk. And so we'll spend about 7 or 8 minutes on this first one, which is around noticing what views or intentions have you found in your mind which seem to lead to a sense of discontentment or stress or dissatisfaction. So, it might be, some thoughts that if only I had such and such, I would be happy. My happiness relies on obtaining this, or some idea that maybe I need to be perfect in order to be happy. So whatever it is, whatever comes up when you think about what view or intention do I have that's leading to unhappiness, and then just say it, and then keep going around, and we'll ring the bell. So you can start.
Make it a little bit easier. So one phrase.
Oh, I forgot about that.
One phrase that has been helpful for a lot of people is if you can say, whatever's happening, it's right on time. You're not too late, too early. You don't have to make it go away. You don't have to. It's right on time. It's happening. It's there. So can we take a look at it? Another one that Diana came up with, she said, it's okay. Sometimes simple view, it's a simple way of looking at something that's happened. It's okay.
So we have a few minutes left. If some of you might want to share things that you discovered in your conversations. Anyone feel willing to make a comment? Or?
Do you think Martin Luther King would say, hey, it's okay, let's go on with segregation? What would he do? What if you do if you're in that situation, you know? You have actual responsibility for changing something, or you feel that you do. Is that person supposed to say, it's okay, let's forget about it?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So it's not meaning like a blanket acceptance of all the injustices of the world. It's more like something that can help you take a closer, more honest look at what's happening internally. When it's really uncomfortable, or when it's not what you expect, or when it's that's kind of some in that context. But thank you for clarifying. It's not just okay, a blanket, it's okay. Thank you for clarifying that. And that's not the message that mindfulness gives. It actually says if you pay closer attention to, then you can probably respond more wisely to situations where there are grave injustices going on. It doesn't have to be out of violence or anger. It can be out of wisdom and compassion. Thank you.
Okay, well, we have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to give you some suggestions about how to keep practicing from week to week. So, of course, one of the things is I think all of us would like to encourage you to continue to meditate every day. You know, really find a time when you can keep doing. You know, set aside a certain amount of time, whatever it is, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or half an hour, to keep practicing that. The ability to pay attention gets stronger as you keep practicing. And then in addition, one of the resources that we offered during the five-week course were these exercises, which are either you received when you took the course, or if you don't have them anymore, they're available online. So you can... Oh, they're available right here. So you may want to work with some of the exercises that were given during the five-week course to keep kind of challenging and energizing your practice. So I want to encourage you all to continue to sit, continue to practice. And feel free to come and talk to any of us if you have questions or things that you would challenge you. So thank you very much.